This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You need surgery.
Bisexuality.
Bisexual.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexual.
Triple bypass.
Bisexual.
Bisexual.
Bisexuality.
Bisexuality.
The best of both worlds.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass
on Joy 94.9.
Triple bypass acknowledges that we broadcast from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. And to any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people who are listening today. We acknowledge that this land was never ceded, no treaty was ever signed, and that it always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
A surprise, but now I see that that's just me. It's not like I even tried. So if you ask me how I'm doing, here is my reply. I'm getting by. I'm getting by. Oh yeah, I'm letting my bi flag fly. Not gonna hide it, not gonna lie. I'm a bi kind of guy. There's no reason to be shy. Till the day I die. Now some may say, oh, you're just gay. Why don't you just go gay all the way? But that's not it, cause bi's legit. Whether you're a he or a she, we might be a perfect fit. And one more thing, I tell you what, being bi does not imply that you're a player or a slut. Sure, I like sex.
Please make him stop.
Slow until I feel at ease. So if you ask me how I'm doing, I'm feeling peppy, sprightly, spry. I'm getting by. I'm getting by. And it's something I'd like to demystify. It's not a phase. I'm not confused. Not indecisive. I don't have the gotta choose blues. I don't care if you wear high heels or a tie. You might just catch my eye because I'm definitely bi. Intellectual to get that I'm bisexual.
Oh, what a way to start a show. This is Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9, and that was Getting By from the show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I'm Ruby.
I'm Andrew.
And we are very happy to be here on another Tuesday night. We are joined by wonderful returning guest Alex Ann.
Hi, wow.
And we also are very excited to have Nat on the show, who's been is shadowing in to kind of see if she wants to join our growing little bipan family.
Hi, everyone. Let me join.
Please let me in. So on this episode of Triple Bypass, we're going to be talking with Alex about the art of giving an apology, how it can go wrong, when it's appropriate. And of course, as always, we'll be bringing you the latest and greatest updates on the Bi Plus agenda. All that and more coming up with a show that puts the B in LGBTIQA+. Now, if you want to get in touch with us, as always, you can email us on air at joy.org.au or text on 0427 569 949. And you can shout up on our socials at Facebook, Triple Bypass on Joy, Twitter, Triple Bypass, Instagram, Triple Bypass Joy, and email us at any time at triplebypass@joy.org.au. Also, we're on Spotify now, which is very exciting.
We're on Spotify now?
We're on Spotify now.
Oh, wow.
So on iTunes and on joy.org.au/triplebypass. But if you're like me and just live on Spotify, now I live there too.
Excellent. What a place to be.
Download a little bit of bi into your ears. I don't know how to say that. Oh, we got a message. Ruby has a lovely voice from the queers at Wellington Street. Shucks, thanks, queers on Wellington Street. That's nice.
I agree.
I always like getting sent in compliments. Now, on Bi News. So, Bi Health Awareness Month has just finished. It was actually kicked off Autism Officially Awareness Month, but I like to go with acceptance because everyone's aware of autism. Y'all just need to get a bit more on board with it, in my personal opinion. But with Bi Month, so Health Month, we've had more research and studies come out over the last month that have kind of highlighted why we have a whole month dedicated to it. And one of them was from the Trevor Project, which is an American organization providing crisis intervention and suicide prevention services for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning LGBTQ young people under 25. So they've released a new report on the experiences of bisexual young people. And some of the statistics there are not ideal. So again, it's just affirming all the things we've talked about before in the areas of prioritizing for the bi-plus community around mental health. One of the things I thought was really important to talk about was how the report highlights that many bisexual people feel and deal with this persistent feeling of not fitting in anywhere. And this is like seen as a driver for anxiety and that sort of thing. But I feel like that sense of not fitting in anywhere has been a bit of a definer from my life as an autistic person as well as a bisexual person. But when you kind of find the places where you do fit, it just makes it all the more satisfying. It's kind of like, oh, I didn't even know I was holding that in and I can just let it out and I fit in this space perfectly. I'm not sure. Have you found that stuff starting to fit a bit more, Andrew?
It's
you're fitting on the show pretty well.
Thank you. It's amazing to see how much we cling to, latch onto community when it's offered, especially when... because for large swathes of our community, we've been kept aside, kept out, gatekept. So when we can get a hold of a community, when we can get a hold of people who like accept us, well, we join in, we get amongst it.
I think we might not always be aware that of what it feels like to fit in until we find it. I think that was one of my little areas, like, oh, I didn't know this is what comfortable felt like. Like, I thought that other thing was comfortable and it was not anywhere close to it.
It's great when you don't have to compartmentalize your identity. Same with being like mixed race or having like multiple neurodivergences. Mm. It's like, yeah, I'm not part of all these things. I'm this person and I can be in all of these spaces. And that's really special.
Yes, absolutely.
An intersectional approach, an intersectional view.
I think it's also wonderful. Just a big sigh of relief when you've got permission to be in spaces where you can feel yourself as well. And it's nice to kind of not have to hang on to that weird, awkward, not quite fitting in feeling.
Yeah.
So I think that can be a real relief for some people.
I think maybe it
was for me.
Mm. Yeah, and I think once you've let go of it, you know, you don't want to pick it up again, so you're more likely, I think, to seek it out, I hope. I always like to think that it's one of those feelings that once you have it, you protect it and look after it a lot.
Embodiment rather than curation.
Yes, thank you, Alex. Oh, beautiful. And what else is in the news?
We've also got an amazing breaking news article from Pink News, the LGBTIQA Plus news website, which has pointed out that J.K. Rowling has confirmed that Harry Potter will come out as a bisexual and have a love affair with Ron Weasley in a new spin-off. April Fools.
I feel like that's already fan fiction on the internet, though.
There's definitely fan fiction of that.
Some very well-written fan fiction.
So much. But also, I love this because I think that it became a meme of J.K. Rowling saying characters are queer, like, or people of colour, like, post the book being published. I mean, like, I didn't say they weren't. And everyone's, like, saying, that's not what representation is.
It would be really nice if you'd done that in the... in the narrative.
It's interesting because I think, you know, these books are getting published in the early 90s. I don't think they would have gotten published at all. Like, that's me being a bit pessimistic, though, maybe.
But there was plenty of time. We were talking about this before. It's like there's plenty of time for her to have added that in. Like, the series went on for so long.
It's true.
If it was, in fact, the case, by the fourth book, a storyline could have been wedged in.
Just mentioned Dumbledore casually coming back in his leathers.
It wouldn't have lost any money. It would have increased sales.
I'm surprised they're all trans.
Yes. Oh, my God. The real headcanon. I think the issue is because she was saying that, she made a point saying that Dumbledore and Grindelwald had a steaming love affair. It's like, we get it.
Where is it written?
Where is it in the book, Joan?
In
part.
Invisible ink.
Your mischief was not managed. We're all Harry Potter nerds, it's canon. I thought that was a fun April Fool's thing, though, because mostly everyone was just like, how dare Harry do Hermione dirty like that?
Oh, dear.
Damn it, Ron, get your shit together.
Look, in the classic Polly universe, it just works. It just works better.
As long as there's communication and consent, they can all do their thing.
That's the way.
But there is definitely fan fiction of this.
All of the things we have mentioned so far.
Oh, and so much more.
Oh, yes.
Some other bit of lovely news is that Thai filmmaker Tan Warren has made history this week, becoming the first transgender MP elected in Thailand. And so she wants... a lot on her agenda is talking about changing to look at getting the right for same-sex marriages and child adoption. And so that's... And she was talking on social media that, you know, about particularly to amend section 1448 of the Civil and Commercial Code to say any two people can be married. And that if this can be fixed, it would remove a barrier and open up a door to many new things. And taking to social media following her election, she wrote, "Thank you for the hope of everyone who believes that we still want a new good future together." And then she added, "Thank you from this little bisexual heart." And then I melted forever, and then I died. That was what happened on that. I was just like... that was posted on one of the bi Facebook groups. I was just like, her little bisexual heart. I know. So I thought that was a lovely news after some of the awful things that are happening in politics around the world. It's like, good on you, Thailand.
We love you.
We love you.
Tan Warren, thank you from the bottom of my little bisexual heart.
I feel like that just needs to be the sign-off for everything now.
From the bottom of my bisexual heart. Of my giant bisexual heart.
Can we indoctrinate that into this podcast?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. We can all like say it in unison at the end.
And then record it and every episode.
Just play it like underneath, like subliminally. You will feel our love for you.
Take up that bass register.
Exactly. So coming up, though, we'll be talking around apologies. And I think this is something that I was really interested in bringing onto the show because in a lot of the queer spaces I move in, there's a lot of consciousness around, or a growing consciousness around trauma, around anxieties and triggers and consent. But also with that comes that wonderful queer thing of conflict avoidance and trying to move away from things that make us feel anxious and upset because that's been where we've had to spend a lot of our time. So we don't want to live in that space anymore. So I thought it'd be really good to talk about why it's really important sometimes to actually to do all that work and work on it, which is actually the name of the song that Alex chose to set off this segment. So after these messages, you'll be hearing Work by Charlotte Day Wilson, as we'll be chatting about the art of the apology with Alex Zand. So stay tuned. I'm Ruby.
I'm Andrew.
And this is Triple Bypass on Joy.
I think you should know.
That's right. This is Joy 94.9 and you have tuned in to Triple Bypass. We're here to put the B in LGBTIQA+, but also a couple of P's for pansexual and polysexual, another Q for queer and questioning. Anyone else who wants to join in, we're not going to check your credentials. You're all queer enough for us. That's the best part about it. My name's Rebe.
My name's Andrew.
We're joined by Alex Zand.
Hello again.
Hello again. And we have Nat on the show who's here to suss out this wonderful little hodgepodge of things that we call Triple Bypass and to help us out in the future, which is very exciting. Now, before the show, we were talking about the bi news that's been happening around the world, and then we got to hear that beautiful song that Alex chose for us, Work, by Charlotte Day Wilson. And obviously you put a lot of thought into picking that song for this topic as well, because for a discussion around apologies and how to apologise, I think that's such a beautiful song.
Yeah, part of the reason I chose that was because it has this slowness that is really true to the work that needs to be done when you are righting your wrongs and your missteps, and when you are showing people that you really care about them and you want to fix those mistakes or move forward with everyone together. That takes time, and that's not a quick fix, and that's not really, it doesn't really feel great. It's awkward, it's clunky, it's abrasive, but it's important.
I think that's an excellent summary of what an apology is, absolutely. Now, Alex is a maker, mover, ritualist, a spoken worder, kind of non-binary, but mostly otherwise, an annotated bipan STEM, which is stud femme, Vogue star, and advocate of four-ish years, performance artist, and all-round babe. Single babe.
Relationship anarchy forever.
Now, so we're going to, as mentioned, we're going to be talking about apologies, saying sorry and doing it right, because you can definitely get it wrong. You can get in touch with us about this topic on air at joy.org.au or text in on 0427 569 949. So, Alex, how did you become interested in mastering the art of apology, or really understanding what apologies were meant to be?
I think it was the opposite. I stopped being interested. I got really, really bored of performative fake apologies that shifted blame or emotional responsibility to the people that were being apologized to. And I was just like, cool, should I run a workshop on this? Like, my little autistic brain does not compute. Like, let's get it together. And people who I really advocate for were just being real letdowns about it and weren't doing the work. They were kind of skimming over it and being like, yep, cool, that's done, that's a band-aid, and it leaves the person that you've wronged feel really shitty. I don't want that anymore.
And so was it finding what was right? Was it really looking at what wasn't right and trying to find the solutions for that?
Exactly. It was seeing the needs and trying to patch together what I felt the needs were. So what I'll hopefully be explaining, hopefully it'll be helpful, but it is from my lived experience. And this is informal apology. This is, you know, someone's grabbed your hair at the bar, you've told them off, and they're fixing it and they're apologizing. This isn't written academic apology. This is not any form of office or corporate weaponized thing. This is just how to acknowledge what you've done and, you know, move forward with the person that you might have wronged.
So I think what's the biggest mistake someone can make while trying to apologize?
I mentioned it briefly, but it's shifting blame and emotional labor. So to kind of unpack what that means and give it more context, emotional labor is any form of work that needs to be done involving emotions. So, for example, when you work in retail, for example, you might be expected not to bring in your current stresses to work. And that's called emotional labor, because you're holding those away and you're not doing that work and that processing in that space. So it's shifting responsibility from the person who has been told they need to apologize or feels they should apologize onto the person that is being apologized to. So a really good example of this is, I'm sorry you felt that. So you're apologizing for that. You're saying sorry for the other person's feelings so that they exist instead of acknowledging those feelings and then doing something about it.
So it's like that kind of removal of your own responsibility in that. So it's like if you try on someone's foot, one's like, oh, I'm sorry that you think it hurts. Is that kind of a... I always try and use foot stepping on as like an accidental apology, like how to apologise when it was an accident.
Yeah, like it doesn't actually hurt, but sorry you feel that way.
Yeah, maybe just like, are you sure? Like, okay, if you're going to be like that.
Yeah. I didn't do it on purpose.
You're just choosing to be offended.
All of those things are really big mistakes that a lot of people make.
Mm. And where do you think that comes from? Like, because like, you know, people usually that to try and... Do you think it's because we just want to think we're good people or because that idea that we've hurt people doesn't always compute with how we see ourselves?
I feel like it can come from different places. So a lot of the time it can come from a feeling of obligation rather than empathy. Mm. So this idea that, oh, when this happens, I should do this. And it's like a platitude. It's not a real thing you believe in or support. It's just, you know, when someone gets your pronouns right in front of you but never... when they're away from you, or when, you know, a white person has dreadlocks and they're like, yeah, but yeah, it's like, it's not excusable, but a lot of people find the inconvenience of doing that emotional labour way more of an easy thing to deal with and ignore because of the society we live in that is founded on physical and emotional labour of minorities being trotted all over. And I think as well, it comes from a sense of entitlement that people think they should be entitled to be in the right if they didn't intend to do harm. Like, you still burnt me with boiling water on my face, Mum. You know, Mum did not do that, just saying. But like, yeah, it's like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to, but I'm also in the ER, you know?
That even unintended harms are harms. They still hurt. It's you know, it doesn't matter if my foot is long. If you've still trodden on my toes, I'm still limping.
Yeah.
Do you think that we're seeing this a bit more at the moment? You know, when we've had some of the public apologies that have come out, people who've apologised in the wake of, say, sexual assault claims or, you know, racist comments, and the apologies always around. Like you've said, I'm really sorry that you felt like that. That wasn't my intention. When we're seeing those kinds of platitudes trotted out in the public space, do you think it makes it harder for us to actually look at the way we apologise beyond it being a platitude when we're seeing so many public figures apologise in such a crappy fashion?
Or even in an almost sincere way, like our apology to Stolen Generations, and then to see the behaviour not stop?
It's almost a microaggression to...
It is a microaggression. Yeah.
Well, it is, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're right on it. And speaking about land rights on this country and this landmass is really important because right now in the West, there's the Jatwarong Embassy and they're trying to save some really sacred trees and sites.
That's the birthing trees.
Yeah. They all have different kind of purposes from my understanding, but the idea is like, cool, stop, don't do this road thing. And we've given you alternatives and solutions, but what keeps happening is they keep pushing back the work date and they're going to still try because it's like, oh, you know, we've acknowledged, like, this is probably wrong, but we're, you know, not going to change anything. And that's like, the toxicity of an ill-informed and a bad apology. And that's built on colonialism, and that comes from something we're all taught, especially as children, that, you know, you hit this person, go and say sorry. It's like, whether you're sorry or not. And I've definitely done that before, especially when I was a teenager and younger, I'd just kind of like get it out of the way. But my ideal and my empathy was still not there. Mm. So that's part of how I learned as well, was being ready to acknowledge my wrongdoings and embracing that learning, because that can be really rewarding for everyone involved.
Excellent. Well, we're going to get into how to apologise, so really how to get into that hard work right after these community messages. And the next song coming up is going to be Dog by Mona Hayder featuring Jackie Crew. So stay tuned. This is Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. Language warning.
If you think this song is about you, I don't know what to tell you. The DL, sheikhs in my DM, begging me to shake it on my cam in the PM. Sheikhs on the DL, sheikhs in my DM, riding in the Addy like a Saudi Arabian. A teacher, a guru, ooh, you just some doo-doo. Said I
on the hustle, but you just a produce. Boy, you ain't got no juice. Boy, you drive a old coupe. Too little for your ego, and I cannot give you no boost. Say my voice is haram, cause you getting turned on. Boy, you might need Quran. Boy, you need a turn down. Got my full hood on. Got my full hood on. Sultan Mar Athoura. Got my full hood on. See them flashy CDs in their city suits. Koofy turbans and the prayer beads are rocking too. Twitter, Insta, hear those howls. When the sun sets, trying to hunt me down. So
you can see my spirit, but you're a dog and me.
We can see right through him. He's a dog.
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 He's a dog. All you need, tell me how come you got a wife.
Now that reefer in his goofy. He's a dog.
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 Not a yummy cookie. No looky, looky, looky. I am not a rookie. Better watch out for Dookie. Min Fadlak Ghad Basarak. Min Fadlak Ikhsha Rabak. Spiritually violent, deviant but hiding it. You can't sell enlightenment, laugh at your entitlement. Panel on women, only dudes. Excuse me? Really? Rude. Emotional terrorist, thinking that you're airless. But you need a therapist. Boy, you need an exorcist. Throwing up them gins and ghosts.
No fly list, coast to coast.
Baby, habibti, pretty, please. But you work at Chuck E. Cheese. You get grays, they don't age. Robin, cradles, middle age.
See, you can see my spirit, but you're a dog and man.
We can see right through him, he's a dog.
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 Shifts in my DM, begging me to shake it on my cam in the PM. Shifts on the DL, shifts in my DM. Riding in the Audi like a Saudi Arabian. Sorry, I have allergies, allergic to your salary. And when you call me sweetie, you are giving me a cavity. Boy, you're too much calories, obsessed with my anatomy. And your flattery is just a mirror for your vanity.
See, you can see my spirit, but you're a dog and man.
We can see right through him, he's a dog.
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 He's a dog. All you need, tell me how come you got a wife.
Now that reefer in his cookie. He's a dog.
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 Say, you can see my spirit, but you're a dog and man.
We can see right through him. He's a dog.
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 What an ending.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God, you need God. You need, not anymore, because now you're on Joy 94.9 and you're listening to Triple Bypass with Ruby.
And Andrew, all you need is us.
All you need is us. We are your deities now. No, God, that's too much responsibility. Oh, no. I can barely run a radio show.
I can handle it.
Nat's there. We're joined by Nat, who's looking at joining the show soon and is very keen, and I'm living and loving for it. And Alexand, who has been chatting with us about the art of genuine apologies and why that's really important, particularly in queer spaces where, firstly, our communities are smaller and we do tend to have a lot of rough and sore patches on us. That was Dog by Mona Hayter featuring Jackie Cruz. I love that song very much. Thanks, Alex.
Lateral violence. That's kind of what we're talking about. To really decontextualize this very specific song.
So before, in our last segment, we were chatting a bit about what led to you, particularly Alex, in really wanting to understand what makes a good apology by seeing so many bad examples, and also what's the biggest mistake people can really make in their apologies, and why is, and also what are we seeing from the people around us in, like, you know, on the media and on stages in positions of power and how they use apologies. If you think, wow, that sounds great and I've just tuned in, don't worry, there'll be a podcast soon. It'll be available on Spotify and iTunes.
And you can get in touch with us on 0427 JOY 949. That's 0427 569 949, or email us at onair@joy.org.au. While we were talking about sorry and to contextualize, eye contact, terrifying. This is why I'm on radio. You mentioned, while we were talking about sorry previously, the power of apology and the power of words, it had me thinking about duality of language and how the idea that while my intent matters somewhat to a conversation, it's your reception of the language that I have used that brings meaning into whatever I've said. Do you have any thoughts?
Okay, yeah, I can definitely talk about this. To just backtrack to what just happened, I swung my head around and gave like some really like cheeky pointed eye contact. And I could see that made you uncomfortable. I don't want to make you uncomfortable, so I will try my best to reduce my pointed joking eye contact so that you can feel more comfortable to do your job and not threatened.
Here's an apology I prepared earlier.
Voila.
I appreciate the object lesson.
I wasted about 5 seconds.
That was not 5 seconds wasted.
I mean on the act, not the apology.
Yes. A learning.
Yeah. So actually speak about the topic. Both parties, the person who has done something that is hurtful and the person who has been wronged. What I want to talk about, and the reason why reframing the way we apologize is important, is that a lot of the power is given to the idea of forgiveness. It's something I grew up with, like it's very Catholic Church in my experience, that you need to forgive, and it actually does nothing. What it does is excuse behavior. It doesn't change behavior. So what I want to kind of focus on is shifting that power from the person who has done wrong, and instead of absolving them, to put responsibility on those people, and so that the person who has been wronged can feel empowered to make that decision on whether or not they want an apology, how they receive an apology, and what next steps can be taken so that everyone can move forward together.
So you're kind of touching on boundaries there.
Definitely.
Do you want to expand on boundaries there?
Solid boundary might be... someone that you've been in a relationship with might have some really strong opinions about you, and they might have shared some of those opinions with people they're also close to that are not related to you in any way. And then, you know, that might circle around, think like high school politics, like rumors. It might get back to the person that's meant to be your spouse or your ex-spouse at this point. And so if that ex comes to you and says, hey, I've heard you've been talking shit, do you want to speak about that? That's a boundary opened up to say, I would like you to acknowledge what you've done. But if something gets back to someone and someone else jumps in first and goes, oh, such and such heard about what you said and that it's gone around to everyone and now you're going to cop shit, they might decide to jump the gun and say, hey, I've said some stuff, I've made some mistakes. I would like to apologize if you're comfortable with that, because I know that you've been hurt by some of the comments I made. So that's just an example that might happen.
So kind of reaching out without the obligation of the recipient to return.
Yeah, without there being an onus or a forced kind of expectation of that person receiving and accepting an apology.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting idea of moving the parameters on that, because I've always thought that was one of the things I found uncomfortable about public apologies, because, you know, it'd be very difficult to say, no, I don't accept that, if everyone's looking and being like, oh, this person's done this grand gesture. And on the other side as well, felt like there have been times where I've done wrong and not known how to go forward with an apology, because it felt inappropriate to be public with it, because it felt like I was manipulating the situation, and so not knowing how to move forward from that point either.
I really feel strongly about that in related to people doing marriage proposals.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Like, I'll say yes to you and then later be like, new boundary, no.
Social anxiety, ahoy.
Oh, I'm not getting married unless you give me a real good visa.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a complicated set of feelings, isn't it? Marriage and all of that.
Sideways step.
But the idea of a proposal coming out of the blue and being sprung, especially as a gendered spring, but a sprung question without consulting with the other person, without knowing that that's the plan.
Well, but it's again because the intention is obviously this thing of I want everyone to know how much I loved you, which is can often tie into the behaviour of everyone knowing it being more important than the person you're actually directing it at.
Performativity.
performative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
and
a big
people
one.
Mistaking brand gestures for meaningful
the
gestures.
The head's doing performative gestures?
That doesn't happen. It happens a lot.
I swear, for me, there's been an interesting thing of kind of just trying to talk about, particularly with LGBTI people I've known for a while in earlier stages when we were all kind of butting heads as angsty teens or a bit older, and particularly in response to things like that, and also just that sense of not knowing how to bring something up in a way of, am I asking for an apology or am I just kind of wanting you to know this happened so that you don't do it again? And I think that's interesting, like, other side of that as well.
And what happens after the apology? Because often we're expecting apologies or we get an apology, but there's an expectation that in many cases there might be work or emotional labour to be performed by the person who's giving the apology after that.
Something I'm realising as we're speaking is that I haven't given, like, the structure that I think is really effective. So I'm going to backtrack through that and then answer the question. I think what has worked in my experience and what I've seen people do really well, or the opposite of what I've seen people do really well, is to firstly ask if it's okay to apologise, so feeling out for a boundary. If you get a firm no, that person might not be ready, and you might be able to ask, like, is, you know, would you be open to one in the future, or is this like a closed door? Like, is this too far gone? I need to accept that. And then if you get a yes, being able to say, to own your actions and only speak about your actions. And so a way to do that might be, you know, I know that when I pulled your hair when we were on the dance floor, regardless of my intention, it was hurtful, and I know that's not okay. Thank you for, like, yeah, you know, something I would do is probably yell at someone if they pull my hair on the dance floor, which happens a lot. But anyway, you know, your response was valid. Your hurt is real, and I don't want to do that. So what I will do in the future is maybe not pull your hair on the dance floor and try and be more conscious of that. Something that's a little bit more sticky might be pronouns. So saying, I'm aware that I've been using the wrong pronouns for you. I'm going to make a concerted effort to correct this. And going forward, if I do make a mistake, I will correct myself and not make it your problem, and not make it something you have to focus on and teach me about. And then the last step is, like, acknowledging of terms and just kind of saying, does this sound okay? Have I got everything covered? Like, is this everything? Is there other parts of it? And letting that person know that they have the room to be like, actually, no, you really hurt me because of this, not that you accidentally pulled my hair on the dance floor. It was when you ditched me that night or whatever. So acknowledging of responsibility, acknowledging the action, and then promising or asserting yourself to making progress and change, addressing feelings and experiences and addressing, like, power dynamics can be helpful, and agreeing on, like, a going forward. So if that person is then like, I'd like you to stay away from me for a while, I'll reach out to you, don't reach out to me. Or they might be like, yeah, cool, thanks for acknowledging that. I feel like you're now back on my team and you're not threatening to my safety or whatever. Then you can move forward together. And that's really amazing, because the person who's done the hurting has done the legwork, and then the person who has been wronged is then able to take power of, like, what happens next. Do I accept your terms? Do I add to those terms? Do I reject them? And, yeah, how you go forward from there is really important. So, for example, one last one, Australian government, do better.
Just in general, on everything. Sorry means you don't do it again.
Far out.
We'll be back right after this Between the Lines by Robin. And to finish up on our episode about the art of the apology with Alex Sand, this is Triple Bypass. You're on Joy 94.9.
Am I fitting in between the lines?
Every day you hit my phone up. Every time
you hit my phone up,
it makes my heart jump. I want you to say it, baby.
It makes my heart jump.
Say it like you mean it. It's right there on the tip of your tongue.
You hit my phone up,
and I can feel it. And I like it, baby.
like it.
You get massages. It's not your words.
You know I like it.
It's what's in between them. There's no need to spell it out.
It makes my heart jump.
I know you want it.
Between the Lines by Robin. You're listening to Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9, the deadly bypans of Melbourne, Australia's second deadliest snake, but absolutely the queerest. That's a new one. Thank you for laughing. My name is Ruby.
Hi, mate.
You're fine.
I'll be here all week. We're joined by Nat, who's going to be joining our team soon and just learning all the fun steps that go with me, pushing all the buttons. And Alex Zand, who has been talking to us about the art of the apology, how to get it right, why it can go wrong, and why it's so important that we make the effort to sit in those uncomfortable places that true empathetic apologies often require us to move through. Now, if you have had any thoughts on this or have your own experiences with apologies, if you've got an idea of what is a good apology or one that you've received that was meaningful to you, we'd love to hear about it. So you can email us on air at joy.org.au or text on 0427 569 949. Now, before that song, that wonderful Robin song, we were hearing about your steps for an apology, which was brilliant. I suppose I wanted to say, though, I know that I'm really guilty of over-apologising. So saying sorry for everything. And
queer guilt.
Queer guilt, femme guilt, so much guilt.
Hello, Freud.
Sorry, Freud.
Goodbye,
you're a joke.
Freud.
But you know, there's just that sense of that kind of, and like in a way, it's like it's almost like a, you broke Alex, you broke Andrew.
I'm not sorry.
Sorry,
Fogs,
I'm back.
But I think there's that using apologies being almost like a defense mechanism as well, and the kind of how when you start to throw out sorry more is in a way to try and avoid conflict or avoid harm, or if you're overconscious of assuming that you're the person who is in the wrong. All these different things can kind of change how we see apologies as well. So as situational apologies, obviously I'm not having a long, hard think when I say, oops, sorry, when someone like knocks me over on the sidewalk. But does that mindset, can that affect how we really work through apologies?
That's a really interesting one that I haven't been able to address very much. Like, it can take such a long time to realise that something that's unexpected has happened. So I think for me in those cases, like if someone has like bumped me in the street, I'm a little bit more inclined to just like do the reflex, like it's fine or whatever. But if that person, say, for example, you know, drunkenly stumbled into me and I've been knocked down, that's a bit more serious. So I guess it, for me, there's a little bit of a no harm, no foul element that is ingrained in me that I haven't really addressed too much. And because apologies in the way that I've explained come from empathy and wanting to grow together and, you know, whether or not you're invested in this person. So I guess in those cases, it's a bit harder to be like, okay, what do I do? And I'm not sure I have an answer for that yet, but I will do my best to start thinking about it a little bit more.
I was just going to say, I think with that over-apologising, there tends to be, I know for myself, I feel like I'm sorry. And it's, you know, in a professional context, sometimes it comes across as being sorry for taking up space or for not speaking when you should. So I feel that can perhaps impact the receival of apologies. You know, like, I feel like I should be giving a really big empathetic apology when in fact sometimes it could be the other way around, but you assume that you need to do the labour. That's not to say I never do anything wrong. That doesn't require an apology. I do. But, yeah, I think it's probably...
You would be hard to learn if you did.
Exactly. I think that's a gendered, perhaps a gendered thing sometimes as well, though.
I think it's got to do with power structures on who is expected to apologise.
The interpretation I had of over-apologising was less about... because I've been socialized male when I was a kid. So that, and because I was like quiet and things like that, and I was always taught to be really polite, that's something that I've noticed, like my mum and other women in my family and femmes in my family do a lot. But the interpretation of a like over apologizing is something I attribute with, you know, you've made a mistake. So for example, I've misgendered someone. And then that person, someone, you know, around me, whether it's that person or someone else, has said, oh, this person uses these pronouns, not those pronouns or whatever. And then I've gone, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm the worst person ever. Like, I'll just leave. Like, it, what that does, that over, like overkill, is it's actually more of that performativity, and it takes the conversation away from healing and more on like blame. And that's not healthy for anyone, because I might be like, you're wasting my time, go away thereafter, but not because of the reason they thought. And then they'll think every time I'm around trans people or people who use different pronouns, I'm going to have to like leave at some point because I'm a shit. But the case was, you just wasted heaps of our time instead of being like, sorry, I'm going to try and get this right, correct, move on. Like,
and you made the hurt about, you made the hurt about yourself, you know. If I'm going... I'm so sorry. I'm such a garbage human for screwing this up. I'm making you, or implying that you should be salving my conscience, salving my mistake. And that's massive amounts of emotional labor to put back on you for my mistake, for
sticky. I also think it's an excuse. I always think that sense of I'm just a bad person or I'm just a jerk basically implies that you don't have to change, that you are just, that's just how you are, and that you, the harm that you're causing is without, is outside of any your ability to control. Oh, you know, that was just like, he's too old to change. Oh, you know, it's, that's just how it's been for them. I feel like this is, yeah, that sense of trying to basically find ways as to why you shouldn't, they shouldn't hold you to higher standards, and it's lazy.
This is just the way I am, baby. I can't change.
I'm just a jerk.
It's that person.
Just hard.
Yeah. Especially if it's someone that does care about
you.
And you've just hurt them, and then you start talking about how a bad person you are. Like, it's difficult. And I think, so why do you think learning how to apologise correctly is such an important topic for the queer and LGBTIQA plus community?
I hate having to see and be a part of lateral violence. Operating in really intersectional spaces, and intersectionality being that there are a lot of people who, for example, in its origins, it comes from black women being on the crux of being black but not a man, and then being on the crux of being a woman but being black, so their needs not being met because of those two kind of cancelling each other out in the world of colonialism. So operating in a lot of spaces where we want to make space and time and welcome people in, learning to apologise and, you know, deal with that clunkiness. Similarly with consent, like, dealing with that clunkiness and working through it together and moving forward together, I find that really important for stopping and aiding in some of the healing of some of the infighting, exile culture, and the idea of like calling out and then booting out of people.
Cancel culture kind of stuff.
Yeah, canceling people can for something that they could learn and then be a better asset to the community for is really hard. And in Melbourne, something that I've experienced is that a lot of elders are really afraid of being in spaces because the language and the time they've grown up in. See, I'm apologizing right now for those people, but in a different way. I'm making a bit of an excuse for them. But I am really aware that I have time and space to spend more time bringing those people up to speed than a lot of other people. So I'm not saying you have to, but something I'm really aware of is teaching people who are older to apologize, working with them to rectify their mistakes so that the hard work they've done for us to even exist and have spaces and have time can still be part of that, this whole beautiful thing that we're a part of. And it's family dynamics. So instead of kicking out these people and then having no one to look to who's older, like I have a lot of feelings about this. I cry when I see trans elders visibly. I'm like, you made it, just like Dory. Like, it means a lot to me because those people have survived not only the physical bullshit that they've had to deal with their whole lives, but also the infighting and the real harshness. But in other cases, that harshness and that online kind of culture that we've cultivated is important for protecting ourselves from predators. So it's a double-edged sword, and finding a balance that works for you when you have the space in that moment and you can be present with yourself and figure out, okay, what am I ready for? Do I care about this? Do I want this to go further? You making your own decisions on that and whether or not you want to invest in a person is really important. So I'm not saying everyone should make excuses for each other. I'm saying that sometimes demanding an apology when someone has a couple of steps to go before they can empathize is also important. And if you want to do that work with them, that's really amazing of you, and you should be paid for it.
Oh, gosh. I think it's also, we're going to have to round up the show soon because the quote is coming up. I suppose one of the things for me as well is that by someone apologising, it also is an acknowledgement that it's happened. And I think that sometimes within our communities there can be, you know, there's, I feel like this term's overused, but the gaslighting, that sense of that thing isn't real, therefore you've kind of been hurt by it. And so with biphobia, like, you know, the phobia that no one talks about, that sense of having, I mean, the first time someone was like, I'm sorry that I said this biphobic thing, and I was just thinking, being like, oh, so you do realise that, oh, God, I feel like that sense that, oh, this is a real thing, the pain I felt at that has actually been realised, and it's not just something that I have to go and then deal with in my own private time.
An acknowledgement almost, and paying attention to...
That's entirely an acknowledgement, I would say.
Internal, you know, the internal power dynamic that's going on in queer spaces. The clock is ticking on.
I got it. You got 20 seconds to say our goodbyes.
Everything is fine.
What were we going to say? What was the thing?
From the bottom of our bisexual heart.
From the
Literally.
Bottom.
Okay.
So,
check
one, two, three.
From the bottom of our bisexual hearts. Thank you.
We'll be back next week on Tuesday. Stay tuned for Local Roots bringing you some great Aussie music.
Don't forget to check us out on iTunes,
and Spotify, and Facebook at Triple Bypass on Joy, Instagram at Triple Bypass Joy, and Twitter at Triple Bypass. I'm Ruby.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Alex.
I'm Nat.
We'll see you next week. This is Joy.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.